One advantage I have is I got no issues being patient and holding. And my first Bitcoin was in 2015. The large majority of my liquidity, or every time I need cash flow here in the UAE, it comes from shaving off the top of Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
The profits from Bitcoin is the main reason. Why sell the winner to buy the loser? People that I know that take risks, they're thrilled by it, they enjoy it, they want it now. It's not going to happen. It's got almost nothing to do with the money, other than the fact that the money is an indicator that you're doing it correctly. If I was to start again, I probably would allocate capital to those and not these sexy businesses because of the odds of success. They're honestly the weakest generation we've seen in five decades. Just start something and give value to someone that you think needs it. That's it.
All right, we're here with another special episode with a great friend of mine who's just recently been here. His name is
Daniel Pekic.
Daniel Pekic. Good to have you here, brother.
Thank you, bro.
Absolutely. So for the audience that are listening here right now, who is exactly Daniel?
It's a loaded question, but I'm a 35-year-old male originally from Australia. I'm a dual citizen, Australia and Croatia, and I've lived all around the world. Southeast Asia, including Bali, Sumatra, Thailand, in Europe, in Austria, and also Croatia. In Australia, obviously, lived in the United States, and I've lived in parts of South America too. Not just traveled, but actually lived there. Minimum 3 months, maximum 2 years in each spot. I have two residencies now, here in the UAE, and then over in Indonesia, which is my main place of business, which we'll talk about. And during my travels, I feel like I've picked up a unique perspective of the world, not just the business landscape, but obviously the culture too, which is why you see me wearing your Kandura today that I love so much. And the main reason I wear it is not what people would guess. It's so hot outside and this is so comfortable, man.
Yeah,
like it fits. When people go, why do you wear it? I'm like, how do you not wear this?
Especially with a color, it just doesn't... It goes so well with the sun, you know, as certain colors just attract some of the heat from the sun, but the white is just reflects it back and makes you feel so comfortable for sure.
Yeah.
Now, for the people listening, I'm sure they are just amazed that you've been a well-rounded traveler. You've been living in multiple different continents. What sort of business that lets you be able to travel and be able to live in such continents for a long time?
Okay, great question. You might not like the answer, not a sexy answer, but unfortunately or fortunately in life, you need to have luck on your side. And for me, despite all of my attempts at small, medium enterprise and other investments, Bitcoin, man, I mean, I could have never predicted it. One advantage I have is I got no issues being patient and holding. And my first Bitcoin was in 2015. So if not for holding Bitcoin, I wouldn't be living here in Dubai. Even with the healthy businesses that I have now, the large majority of my liquidity or every time I need cash flow here in the UAE, it comes from shaving off the top of Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
The profits from Bitcoin is the main reason. And it gives me a disheartening look at business because I'm very not often motivated to start a new business because I'm always comparing the profits or the potential profits compared to what Bitcoin is giving me. And the average CAGR, so compound annual growth rate of Bitcoin, exceeds 55% per year. I mean, what investment passively, actively has outperformed that? Very few, maybe some niche businesses. And in the kind of global markets, nothing. I mean, it's the best performing asset over the last 15 years. So yeah, in one way, it gives me financial freedom and freedom in general. But on the other hand, it deters me from starting any new business because I'm constantly comparing it to that. I guess the counter argument is that people say, oh, well, it's risky. But, you know, put yourself in my shoes. How many cycles have I been through? How many cycles have I been through where people are like, it's going to zero. It's going down. It'll crash. It's a bubble. I've got 4 cycles under my belt now. I sleep soundly at night, just like I do now. And it's 118,000 today. People were saying it was going to crash when it was 10,000. And I'll be saying the same thing, I think, when it's a million. So I have no intentions of, you know, liquidating Bitcoin to start something else. Because as we say, why sell the winner to buy the loser?
We'll definitely talk more about the crypto But I want to go back.
Okay.
Just reflecting back in your past away. Can you maybe share a moment in your early life that shaped your mindset that you have today?
Okay. So I come from a very traditional European background. You get a trade, then you go to university, hopefully get a better job than your father. My father was a bricklayer. I also was bricklaying on weekends with him. Now, it is considered hard labor. And I know that some people may be watching aren't used to it, but if you take a look at my household, very athletic household, it wasn't hard. I mean, at 21 years old, I was so fit. I would go to work in the 35, 40 degree heat, 8 hours, then go to the gym, run 5, 10Ks, then do weights, and sometimes even go out after that at night socializing. There was no such thing as being tired until I reached maybe my late 20s. Okay, so I started out with hard labor. And in Australia, if you work hard and you save money, you can save the initial capital to start your own bricks and mortar business. And then I did so by taking advantage of geo arbitrage in a cheaper country, Bali, which was a 3.5 hour flight from my home city of Perth. And I opened up my first tattoo shop. So before buying Bitcoin, you obviously need the initial capital. And I did that via my tattoo shops.
How many years ago was that when you went to Bali?
Coming up 11.
11 years ago?
Yep.
We're talking about 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Much people didn't even know about Bali at that time, I believe. Like, if you think about it now, it's just filled with influencers, social media influencers, you know, people who want to live the digital nomad, going there to Bali. It's more so Thailand than people from Australia used to go.
No, but I can see why you think that way. As Australians,
mm-hmm.
Bali has always been foundational in our getaway holidays, especially from Perth, Western Australia. This 3.5 hour flight, it's the most common destination for people from Western Australia to go for at least since the 80s.
Interesting.
However, globally speaking, when the internet became more connected, if you will, with social media and you had people posting all of the hotels and resorts, then Bali skyrocketed. So again, I got lucky because my real estate over there, that was, you bought it for a bag of rice, they would say, it was worth nothing. Now the real estate prices there are comparable to some areas here in Dubai.
Mm.
We never could have predicted it, but one thing I've always learned is that when you're in emerging markets, the potential for profit is here, but the potential for downside is here. And if you're in mature markets, it's steadier, but it obviously less risk as well. And Bali, even now, was definitely an emerging market. But I was young and I loved that risk. Starting a business in a foreign country, third world country, cheaper to set up. I enjoyed that risk at the time. And truthfully, as an Australian, knowing how expensive it is to live there, it's the only way to get ahead, in my opinion. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you're talking about risk.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't take the risk enough to showcase their life and change that life forever. You took the risk when you invested in Bitcoin, for example. You took the risk when you went to Bali to start a business. How did you build yourself to feel like, all right, I'm just going to take the chance and just go do it?
It's a good question. My opinion to that is that it's a born trait. People that I know that take risks, they're thrilled by it. They enjoy it. I guess it can even be associated with gambling mentality.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference between gambling and buying something like Bitcoin and starting a business in a foreign country is that it's a more methodic approach. It's a more calculated approach. But you're always aware that the downside is there. And don't get me wrong, there's been mostly failures. I'm talking about two of my success stories. Most of my investments have gone to zero. I mean, we can talk about some of the silly investments I've made. But again, when you're interested, it's a saying in VC, if you're not investing in 20 to 30 things, you're not doing VC properly, venture capital, because you're supposed to, out of those 20 to 30, half of them will lose money, the other half will get your money back, but then one or two will moon. And for me, that one has been Bitcoin, but there has been many failures too.
How did you get yourself back up after those failures?
Okay. When you say back up, I
wouldn't say... In terms of financially being able to invest and other things that you wanted to invest.
Okay. I've never said this online before, but in 2000 and... I'm trying to get the date correct. I came very close to zero again in 2018. Very close. But I guess I had the contacts and I already had a shop that I could improve. I wasn't back to zero. I guess I had capital in terms of my capabilities, and the shop still had healthy cash flow. So when we talk about capital, people typically mean just cash, but capital can also mean contacts and can also mean your capabilities. So at that point, it was real easy for me to get back up because you've already got, you know, people you can call, you've got the capabilities, you know what to do. It's very different. But, you know, for me, it was exciting to be near zero. I've got to be honest. There are times, there are times I speak to my friends, we go, I wish I was broke again. There's no motivation to go further. I've got everything I want. I don't want a massive 500-foot yacht. So the motivation for me to start a company is very small right now. You know, I know that if I just continue to hold my Bitcoin and don't spend it all tomorrow, not only me, but my children and my children's children will be able to live for the rest of their life. But when you're young and you're near zero and you know you need at least 2-3 million capital in order to go travel the world and maybe get a yield from that capital. Maybe you want to have 2-3 million capital and you're getting 10% per year on some yield and you're spending half and keeping half. So maybe you're spending 300 grand a year. It's enough to live, not enough to live like Dubai, but enough. Until you get to that, your motivation is just so high. And I don't have that anymore. I've lost the fire. But some guys can just keep it. Whether at 10 million, 50 million, 100 million, a billion, they just...
never enough.
They're never enough for them, you know? And I don't think it's the money per se. I don't think they're thinking in terms of money. They just love the game. I can't say I love the game to that level. I love having my freedom. For example, coming here today, if I was building a company, I'd say no to everything. I'd say no to having social media. Unless it's completely necessary and specific to the goal of that business, it's no.
It's very interesting. You're saying that if you were starting a company, you would not have social media.
Mm-mm. No way.
Every other business venture that I know, usually friends, they say like, if we wanted to start a business and we wanted to get leads and we want to get the potential clients, we have to go to the social media to market it, to market the service, to market the product. How would you do it if you didn't have social media in this case?
I would have a social media for the bricks and mortar business, but a personal brand, no, because that's not my avenue. That's not something that I'm good at. What I'm good at is my operation systems and being the CEO on the back end. Being famous, A, has never been something I've really like yearned to be. And number two, you can only do so much. And so for me, I just consolidate my time for the day and I'm very self-aware on how much I can work productively. So I know for me that those morning hours after the gym, I can work for about 4-5 hours straight uninterrupted and I'll be productive because activity does not equal productivity. And I'm not going to sacrifice the gym and then I'm not going to sacrifice necessary time to wind down at night and go to sleep. Otherwise, I'll just stress myself out. So I've only got so many hours in the day. And for me, I would just create a social media for the tattoo shop if I was doing tattoo shops again and work in the back end. And then yes, paid ads, Google, Meta. If you have a personal brand, maybe you can kind of like bypass a lot of those paid ads. But for me, that's my strategy. And personal brands go one or two ways. They're good if people like you. Mm-hmm. It backfires on you if they don't. And I've noticed something that although I've grown popular here in the UAE among some Emirati circles and maybe a few specific wealthy individuals, I've had a lot of hate from some of the customer profiles that would go to my tattoo shops. So if I put my tattoo shop handle on my Instagram right now, which I did for a week, maybe I see a decline in sales because they don't like what I'm talking about. And I would have never guessed that they didn't like me talking about this. I said one of the advantages of being here in Dubai and also other emerging economies is the affordable labor for services, maids, cleaners. And you know what people said? Slave master. They called me a slave master. And I had a lot of this from the woke agenda types. And unfortunately, these woke agenda types are customers at my tattoo shop in Bali. So you've got to be careful with personal brands. It goes one or two ways. The whole concept of canceled, that's a real thing. I know some people personally, they've said one thing online and it's really hurt their business. So not always is a personal brand the right way. It's a risk again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not sure that my personality type is likable enough for the masses to take that risk with a personal brand. And it's yet to be seen. I mean, I'm very new to this. So what happens if 3 months from now I'm canceled for something I said? We don't know, you know? It's a very difficult world out there to appease to everyone.
For sure. You mentioned once to me behind the podcast that you said social media gives young people false confidence.
Mm.
What's the real danger behind this?
Well, the real danger is talking before you can walk. And I see this too much. There are a lot of young kids trying to advise people, coach people before they've done anything material themselves. And I genuinely don't think that they're scamming people. I think that they're just delusional. They think they're better than they are. And the reason is, I think, is because they watch, you know, great people like Alex Hormozi, maybe Tim Ferriss. These guys are anomalies, okay? What these guys can do in 3 to 5 years, no one can do in 2 lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would advise a young kid to do, he's not going to listen to me because it doesn't sound sexy enough. I'll say, look, mate, I'm 35 today. I can talk about these things. But I've been trying this stuff since I was 18. You know, 15 years at least. They say, I want to come to Dubai. How do I do it? I've got nothing. I say, well, how old are you now? 20? Maybe when you're 30. It takes about a decade with whatever you're doing to become proficient enough and wealthy enough. Whether it's a passive investment in an ETF, whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's a small medium enterprise, whether it's an online company, it probably takes you about 10 years. But they don't want to hear that. They want to be rich in 2.
Yeah.
And Alex Hormozi himself even said, you overestimate what you can do in 2 or 3 years, but you underestimate what you can do in 10. And so when I give people this kind of blueprint, yep, 10 years, mate, of doing that same thing, they don't want to hear it. They want to get there quicker.
They want it now.
They want it now. It's not going to happen. And you know what? They can talk about it all they want on the internet, on an Instagram, but it doesn't happen. And that's why a lot of them are frauds.
So how do you differentiate someone who's truly genuine and really adding value in social media and someone who's just being delusional or perhaps a fraud, as you say?
Yeah, I guess you have to show some receipts, meaning you need to show some evidence. And it's odd because I didn't show any receipts on my social media, which I think is reflective of the community. And the reason I think people thought I was successful in business, even though I haven't directly spoken about it, is just because of the luxury cars I was driving.
Mm.
But I could have easily rented them. And in the beginning, when I bought my G-Wagon, it took time to come here. I was renting them from Ahmed. I even said it on one of my reels, yet people are like, look at this guy pretending he's renting. And I'm like, bro, I said I was renting. They don't want to look deep enough. So it was odd, but I think that people connected with me because what was coming out of my mouth was unrelated to me driving the luxury cars. It had to do with the fact that some people just innately knew what I was talking about was the truth. You know, you can spot it. You know when a guy is about it when he's not as well. You just know because there's a few things. It's the body language. It's the terminology. Is he regurgitating something some other influencer said? You can just feel it, you know? But at the same time, if you really want to know, because there's great con artists out there, you have to show some receipts, you know? So the people that know me well here in Dubai, like they know what I'm doing, probably what I'm worth thereabouts and the other companies that I'm associated with. And it's good, you know, on a personal level to connect with these higher net worth individuals. But publicly, I got to be honest, I'm not even sure why people think I'm anything. I haven't shown anything.
It's very interesting. Maybe because, you know, we're very visual creatures. We look at what we see there and we see like, okay, this guy has a nice house, has a nice car, maybe has a nice family, a beautiful wife. I want to be just like him. So I'm going to listen to what he has to provide because he has the things that I want. That's why maybe people are looking to listen from you. Maybe the way you speak, the way you're not afraid to say something to the camera or to the people out there. A lot of people are much more afraid and feel like they have to be very neutral. Otherwise, they'll feel, as you say, canceled.
Well, I'm definitely afraid. So there are many things I'd like to say on camera that I don't. I am savvy to that. So I wouldn't say that. I'm definitely afraid. I'm very conscious about certain topics where we are not going down.
All right.
And I don't post my house or my family. Honestly, it's just me driving in the car and walking. And it's not because I wanted to show off the car. It's just that was the only time I had. And if you think back to before I had the 30,000 odd followers 2 or 3 months ago, I didn't know it was going to be a famous reel. I didn't know it was going to go viral. I had no idea. I had no intention. And if you look at my reels, they're not overly edited. It's just me, my mobile phone, and CapCut.
Simple.
This is very simple. You know, there's no intention behind it, but maybe that's what connected with people. Mm. They're like, this is not cheesy and over edited. It doesn't look the same. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe so. Maybe it's your tattoos as well that play a role.
Well, they definitely play a role in me getting hate comments.
Well, I mean, the moment I saw you, I was more listening to your words than seeing who you are as outside. I was very interested in how you're speaking so positively about the UAE.
That's you guys, but bro, you Emiratis do that by default. So by default, you don't judge based on appearance. I don't know why, but that's very commonplace. Now, I haven't met every Emirati, yeah, but I've met quite a few now, and my face tattoos are just not a hurdle. Honestly, in Australia, there is 0.0% chance I'm getting a seat at a government table or a high-level table or a private equity table, no matter how good this is. It's zero chance, and people know that, right? And I know because I tried. I was the same guy when I was in Australia as I am now.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interested in looking at you. Whereas here, within 2 months, you know, I'm meeting government officials. I'm even meeting guys worth, you know, several billion dollars. Not me trying to reach out to them. Them in my inbox. You know, so there's the clear distinction between the West, where they've got a social filter, and then here in the Emirates, where it's a meritocracy, basically meaning if you're good, you're good. We don't care what skin color you are. We don't care about your race, your religion, your face tattoos. If you're not good, you're going home, basically. Whereas in Australia, especially in traditional parts of Europe, where I just came from, Austria, if you're not in those cliques, if you don't dress the way they dress, if you don't have that religious background, potentially less so religion these days, but if you don't kind of fit that profile, there's no way they're going to meet you.
I will see that. I can see that for sure. Now, with all this in mind, with all the experience that you have, what's this one harsh truth you want to give about success to the young people?
Okay. If you're not interested, I doubt it will ever work. You'll always fail. If you think you need to be successful because you need to be successful for some girl or a friend or a parent, you won't get there, because when you're interested, nothing is a struggle. You don't care about the failures. They're all just parts of the journey. But because you're interested, you're doing it. You're getting that dopamine from doing. So when I started my company, I wasn't thinking, well, I'll just do this until I get this rich. It was like, oh, I want to play with WordPress, how to build websites. Oh, HR, I'm going to read about that. Oh, Sigma 6, you know, business process management. That's interesting. Oh, accounting, let's play with Excel. You know, all this technology came out. How can ChatGPT help me? The interest is in it. It's got almost nothing to do with the money, other than the fact that the money is an indicator that you're doing it correctly. So when you get a few wins under your belt, the reason it's good is not so much what you can actually do with the money. It's the fact that you're like, all right, I'm on the right track. But for me building the companies, it was like all I was interested in. So even when I wasn't working, friends might want to go to the cinema and watch Fast and the Furious. I want to watch a YouTube video that Tim Ferriss made, you know? I just loved it. Study of money, economics, macroeconomics, and even things I'll never do, I'll watch documentaries on them.
You love to learn.
I just love to learn anything in that kind of sphere, and then sports as well. So if you're interested and your IQ is thereabouts, and you know, not too much bad luck comes your way, or you stay healthy, because you have to stay healthy, you're not going to build businesses from hospital, then I think you'll get there.
Do you think there's any business that they can start nowadays that they couldn't start in your days?
There's always going to be new gaps in the market. You know, the world is always evolving. I can list, you know, 10 off the top of my head that you could start now, especially, you know, online, e-commerce, etc. But the same principles apply. You know, when you have this supply-demand kind of graph, if you will, you typically find people will jump on too late when the market is oversaturated.
Mm.
And that's when, you know, the great people emerge, you know, like your Amazon will come and then he starts, you know, doing mergers and acquisitions and just starts eating up the market. And the chances of your success go down. Now, there's no problem saying, hey, I'm going to be number one in an oversaturated marketplace, because to be fair with you, that's how it worked with my tattoo shop. My tattoo shop right now in Canggu, I mean, there are literally hundreds of them. It is an oversaturated marketplace, but we felt that we had the winning formula and we didn't worry about how many were there. Now, you can do that. It's just the issue is that a lot of these kids now, for whatever reason, maybe they watch too much Andrew Tate or Alex Hormozi. They think they're smarter than they are. They're theoretical nerds, I call them. The terminology that comes out of their mouth, it's beautiful. They sound really smart, but they just can't figure it out. These are the guys I think they're going to have a problem, because they have confidence that isn't backed by how good they are.
Mm.
And the truth of the matter is, so let's look at stats. Out of 100 businesses, maybe one or two of them succeed over the decade. Your odds are very low in business. Now, as you go along the risk curve, when you go into the bleeding edge of tech, which is where all the sexy startups are, AI, marketing, blockchain, when you start going there, now your odds are even less. Now it's 1 in 10,000. But that's where all these kids want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to start a business that is a series of laundromats, or a series of, you know, basic fitness cafes, or even that is a little bit sexy. Let's say something like an electrical company, you know, things that the world still needs. They don't want to start these types of businesses.
The boring companies. Yes.
The ones that if I was to start again, I probably would allocate capital to those and not these sexy businesses because of the odds of success.
Because even the boring companies, there's not a lot of people that focus on, and the ones that are focused on it, they have this specialized skills that most people don't even have.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's focusing on AI, everyone's focusing on the other direction, and you're focusing on the ones that still are needed to maintain the ecosystem, whole supporting the whole city or supporting the whole industry. For example, in the maritime, or I don't know, in the construction business, there's a lot of different small niche businesses that are still needed today that is not tech savvy, as you could say.
Yeah, I mean, the kids just want to be in those business types because it fits on social media. So if I have, let's say I've got an electrical company. I'm not an electrician, but one of my friends has a very successful electrical company. His Instagram might have, I don't know, a few hundred followers. Doesn't look sexy. But that guy is what we say in Australia, minted. He's worth millions, yeah? Then you have some kid, he's got the perfect editing, AI, let me help you market this way. You know, he's barely struggling to make ends meet because there just isn't the market for that. But they think there is because they saw that one guy who did this one thing. And that's my biggest concern for the generations coming up. They want the sexy businesses. They want it now. And they're honestly the weakest generation we've seen in 5 decades, for sure.
Weakest?
The weakest.
What do you mean by that?
They typically are fat or skinny fat. So they aren't necessarily physically capable a lot of the time when I meet them. Also, because of social media, sometimes they're socially awkward and or delusional. And also, again, I just feel like they're not they're disregarding formalized education as well. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't think you need to go to Harvard. But when you skip so many steps to be this AI CEO at 21 years old, I mean, you create this child, honestly. They're just like children.
It's like they haven't yet matured enough to handle this role.
Yeah.
They require the maturity.
Exactly. Like they say they're CEO of some company. And I'm thinking, even if you're the CEO, you haven't turned over a dollar yet. Don't advertise that. I mean, what do you know about systems? Hiring, firing, monitoring.
Have you lived in that system?
Yes, yes. This is very common now. Whereas for me, at 21, and I'm not saying it should be this way, but because of the social hierarchy from where I come from, you don't even open your mouth at 21.
Mm.
I'm just following orders, listening, and learning. That's it. You know, even bright young kids, if they're going to get, you know, a middle or upper management role, they still keep their mouth shut just based on the age, respecting the elders. And then once you have experienced a few, you know, hardships, if you want to call them, all right, over the course of a decade, then talk about it. Because in Bali, you meet a lot of these diginomads. It's like a diginomad hub, just like Dubai. They'll say, yeah, you know, I'm doing 20K a month and then I'm living out here and they're posting about it. I say, how long have you been gone for in your company, bro? Oh, coming up 2 years now. Anyone can have good 2 years. In fact, they'll post the 1 month they turned over 50, 60K and they say, doing 60K months.
Mm.
So, bro, you just started 24 months ago. You remember COVID? You know, you remember the GFC? You know, do you remember all of these crises, these macroeconomic crises that have came and will come again before you open your mouth? And I've been through a few of them now that I'm just able to talk about it. But if Stanley Druckenmiller comes in the room, I'm shutting up. I'm listening to that guy. You know, you got to know where you are on the hierarchy. And these kids, a lot of them, they just don't.
Don't know much to actually, you know, in terms of like what they're dealing with, they don't know what's going to happen in the future. Despite like the odds of surviving businesses, you said there's a high chance that it might fail.
I would even go as far as saying a lot of them in my inbox, and it's terrible for me to say this. I actually posted a video yesterday and I deleted it because I felt bad. You know, they'll inbox me and they just have this entitlement syndrome. Hey, mate, you know, I'm in Dubai. They're so assumptive. Let's grab a coffee here. I want to run something by you. And I think, mate, I barely know you. You are how old? What have you done? But they think these people are going to meet them and take them seriously, but they don't.
So let's put it in this way. If someone who's a young kid or a young person wants to meet you, what should they do in order to meet someone that they like or someone they want to learn from or someone they want to get mentored by?
Well, I'm not the sort of person that would mentor any kids. And I've said that publicly. I don't think I'm the right person for it. But if someone wanted to meet me, they'd go through my social media, spend the time on my reels and see that I'm pretty much outside of my friends' family, only here to contribute to the UAE in a charitable way and or make money. Now, the sorts of individuals that I want to be meeting are in private equity tables to make a deal, because that's where I am now with my leverage. I've got the capital, you know, I know a thing or two. There's a couple investments that I have that may get over the table for very large deals. And so it pretty much doesn't leave an opportunity for a young person to meet me because I don't need them. I don't need anyone. But to go to the next level, I really need to do a private equity deal, you know, north of $50 million. Otherwise, there's no point for me. Mm. Me, the days of me working 10 hours a day on a small, medium enterprise, making 20, 30K a month, like no disrespect to that, but that's not me. I would not get out of bed for less than $250,000 a month. I just wouldn't do it. Why? There's no need for any more in my life. I'm driving one car at the moment. Why? Because I've had every car that I want. When I have two cars, it just does my head in. I've got to remember to service this. Oh, there's a scratch on this. I'm not driving it. I'm an essentialist. And so for me to have $1 billion, if I have to work every day, there's no point for me. So young kids are probably not going to meet me unless they're equipped. And I don't know any young kids 2021 that are. The guys that I'm meeting, for example, on the 28th, I'm meeting some people in Abu Dhabi, 40s, 50s. I'm the youngest kid on the table.
Mm.
And our CEO looks like he's nearly 60, our new CEO for one of our companies. The reason CEOs are 50, 60, it's for a reason. You know, because they've had that experience and they've got those receipts. They've got the evidence. Our CEO was the president of Topgolf here in the UAE.
Okay.
Okay. Troy Warfield. And when he speaks on the webinars, people are listening. You know, these are the sorts of people that I'm meeting in the future. It's not to be rude to the youngsters. It's just to know your place. So my advice to youngsters is, why you want to meet someone for anyway? Honestly, and why honestly even want to get mentored? The amount of free information out there, just start something and give value to someone that you think needs it. That's it. And that could literally be, I don't have any skills right now. I'm going to go lay bricks with my hand, build properties, because there's a need for this labor shortage there in Australia or whatever. That's a completely reasonable way to go about things. And then you'll learn things over time and pick up other contacts and it'll go from there. But as far as building the next unicorn, the next Uber, I mean, you better be a pretty special person, because guys like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and Alex Hormozy, Tim Ferriss, all these guys, I mean, these guys are freaks. Yeah. These are not normal people. And so be self-aware. Are you one of these freaks? I'm not. I am not as good as these guys in any facet. They are smarter, more motivated. They learn quicker. And their visions are just out of this world. So if you're not a freak, you better do some basic things.
Sometimes you have to be crazy enough to do those things.
You do. But, you know, for every Mark Zuckerberg, there was 100,000 that failed. You only see that one guy, right?
True.
Now, if that is exciting to you, go for it. But me, I'm about just winning. And so I like to reduce my risk where possible.
Hmm.
And, you know, I can't advise someone what to do because they may prove me wrong. But, you know, when people have asked me, certain friends, I'll tell them, you know, if they're not ready for it, I'll say, look, bro, I don't think this is for you. I mean, if I wanted to play basketball right now, all right, it's all good. People saying, come on, man, you can't be an NBA superstar. You're 35 years old. You're 5'10". You don't have the attributes, you haven't been playing, but that's all. But what's the difference me telling someone in business the same? Say, look, mate, you're not bright enough. You don't have it. You don't have the speaking skills. You don't have the IQ. You don't have the vision. Is there anything wrong with that? I don't think so.
So if you're thinking about everything now, we're trying to be realistic in a way that not everyone can become an entrepreneur. That's one thing. Similar as you said that not everyone can become a basketball player. But what if I want to be in my own level? I want to start something in my level. I'm not looking to be an NBA basketball play star, but maybe I want to start something that is decent enough for me to have the financial freedom, for example.
Okay. Well, it's a good question. I would say first, let's define what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I'm thinking and what that person's thinking could be wildly different. I might be thinking $250,000 a month. He might be thinking $2,500 a month.
True.
So if someone says to me, hey, I want to make $250,000 a year, US dollars equivalent. Okay. I'm young. I got nothing. I have an interest in programming, for example. I'd like to get into AI, but I understand that it's a competitive marketplace and a lot of the incumbents, they own the data, you know, it's probably not going to happen for me. But there's this niche where this guy's offered me an internship. Should I go there? I'd say, yeah, go there, go learn. It's $250,000 a year. You'll get there. Just grind it out and probably don't speak about this publicly unless you have the time. And so if they are going to speak about it publicly with a personal brand, I'd say just document. For example, hey, my name is Abdullah. You know, I'm an intern here and here's my day. You know, I'm not good yet, but I'm trying to get good. I love this stuff. I love programming. I'm going to tell you about my day today. So genuine, so nice. That is something that I'd watch. I'd be like, look at this kid. So humble, so honest where he is. And then over time, over 10 years, as he gets better, people watching him, that's good. But when someone goes, hi, I'm Abdullah, I'm the CEO of such and such, and I'm going to, this is, you know, I think that people would smell that. And no, it's bullshit. And the internet will call you out. They will test you. People test me all the time with very challenging questions. I tell you, there are some questions I get, I think, that's a really good question. Because in a two-hour conversation, there's going to be at least one thing I say that's silly. It's just how it is, you know. You take a risk to be vulnerable on camera, and unfortunately, you say something, but people catch you. So,
I mean, but you'll be surprised that by social media, you'll find the haters, you'll find the good people, you'll find the people who are just curious about you, they want to know more about you. So, social media, in a way, unlocks communications or conversations that you would normally not have in public more than anyone else.
Yeah, I mean,
in person, that is.
Yeah, I've literally never had someone try to bully me in person, ever. Even
I mean, I wouldn't dare, probably. Especially seeing him in person, he's a big guy, honestly. So I don't know who would be having that courage enough to just come and bully you in front of you.
Well, there's bigger guys than me, bigger scary guys in Australia. But I don't think it's that. I don't think it's how I look. I think it's the fact that I'm genuinely not out there, at least 99% of the time. I'm not out there to bully and put people down.
Mm.
You know, I don't feel like I get any kicks out of putting people down. And even these haters, they know that, you know, they know I'm not out there to really hurt people. They just love coming on to troll and to hate. And these are the sorts of people that are they're really struggling probably in their personal lives. And I don't respond to hate with hate. I haven't done that for a long time. I don't go on people's Instagrams and be like, ha, 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 look at this. I don't do that. So when people hate, they just hate. I don't respond back to that. It's not going to happen. Maybe I say something clever and smug, but it will never be insulting back, you know?
So for the audience just coming here before we conclude this part of the podcast, if you were to start again from zero.
From zero.
What exact steps would you follow to reach where you are right now? Since you mentioned you love to start from zero. What would you do right now in this year, 2025?
Yeah, man, honestly, really simply. Now, because I'm physically capable, I know tomorrow I can get a labor job, let's say in Australia, in the mines, and pay reasonable compared to any other job. So I can get a low skill requirement job that pays well immediately. So the first thing I'm going to do is take advantage of my physical capabilities.
And take a job.
Take a job straight away. Okay. And then I'm going to live incredibly frugally, just like I did in the past. I'll never forget this story. I was living with a, we'll call her a friend. It was an ex. I feel like I shouldn't say this because this is a very old story. And I said, we're going to the supermarket to get the necessities we need. Mm. Nothing else. Anyway, she grabbed the Listerine. Listerine's the mouthwash.
Yep.
And I didn't consider that as a necessity. Toothpaste was the cheap one. Because she put the Listerine there, I was maybe a little bit immature at the time. I grabbed it and I was like, what's this? Is this necessity? And I put it back on the shelf. Stupid. You know, you're young, you're 21. It's funny now. But that's how frugal I was. I was thinking about a $2 saving, literally. So I would do the same. Whatever's not absolutely necessary, we're not doing it. We're not going to any lunches, not just for Christmas, not just this one night, zero, nada.
All right. So frugal.
Frugal as can be.
Then what?
And then once I get enough capital to start again, a bricks and mortar business in Indonesia where it's affordable, the rent's affordable, labor's affordable, I'm going to start something. It doesn't have to be tattoos this time. It could be a gym. Okay. And now knowing what I know, because I have other capabilities, I might try and fundraise a portion of that or maybe even 90% of that. And then I'm just going to grind it out there again. You know, I'm not going to be the type of CEO that is traveling around the world while my business passively. No, I've seen what happens when you don't watch staff like a hawk.
That's the thing. Yes. I feel like it's something that is a common problem, but you think you can leave your business and let it run by itself. Unless you have someone you can confidently assure that this person is the guy that can act just as you, it's very hard to find that person too.
It's a great question. I think I have a bit of a framework for that. So until a company is at the 5 mil revenue stage, you probably can't afford a salary for a good operator that you can leave it in their hands. Mm-hmm. So until 5 million revenue, even though that's a kind of like ballpark figure because we don't know what the gross margins are, but until you get to that appreciable revenue, you got to be your own operator. Mm-hmm. You're there, bro. So no one's starting out with 5 mil revenue, you're there. So let's say I'm building a gym. I'm basically living in that gym, nonstop watching. And I'm going to learn every person's job as well so I know how to critique them.
Mm.
A lot of these guys say, I got a great accountant. I go, how do you know he's a good accountant? What do you know about accounting? So I've got to learn a bit about accounting to know whether or not my accountant is ripping me or not. And it's the same with the cleaning. It's the same with the till. It's the same with how do we maintain the treadmill. It's the same with the marketing. It's the same with the ads. I've got to set up an ad. Let's go. Let's log on Meta.
So you set it up yourself?
Oh, yeah. Got to do everything in our tattoo shop now, even though I'm not the operator. My sibling is for 50% equity. Prior to, I want to learn everything. Hmm. I want to know the sales process. I want to know how the tattoo bed is cleaned down. What's our hygiene process? How do we get the Zendit Paylink link? I got to do it at least one time.
How do you know if this is the right path, the right way of doing this thing?
by making many mistakes. Because trust me, they'll come and customers will tell you. There's Google reviews.
Okay.
You are constantly under pressure and you have to enjoy it. Because in the beginning of a company, you're doing what we call, you're constantly putting out fires. You never know what's coming in a day. So you can't be like, I've got Friday off, so I'm going to go to this yoga retreat. No. Friday comes, you don't know what's going to happen. This customer's got an infection on their leg. They're trying to blame you. This staff member's sick, or this one's quit. This one's having issues at home. You've got to come over and take over. It's mayhem. And if you don't enjoy mayhem, I mean, your business is going to fail to someone else who does enjoy the mayhem. Because a lot of people live and breathe this.
You got to be obsessed.
You have to be obsessed. And I think I understand how you mean with that word, but if I'm being a language Nazi, you just have to be so into it that you don't even know you're obsessed until your people around you are like, bro, relax. And you're like, what? And they're like, bro, you've been working in your company now for like 2 years. You haven't had a break. And I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't. That's when you know you're good.
What do you believe, since you've been with a lot of successful people, what do you think they have that others don't have that makes them so successful?
Great question. You might not like this answer. Out of the people that I've met, me personally, the vast majority of them have what we call inheritance.
Inheritance.
Yes.
So trust fund, yeah. Kids, people with generational wealth.
Yes.
Interesting.
Now, are they motivated, intelligent individuals that are well-rounded men? Yes, because how did their fathers get that rich? They got good fathers, but they start with that initial capital, and it will blow your mind with how much capital some people start with. So you don't often hear that story. Now, even though I didn't start with any capital per se, I tell you what I did start with that a lot of people don't. This is good for the Emirati audience, because I will say that the Emiratis, the Australians and the Scandinavians are some of the most spoiled when it comes to having things taken care of. I didn't pay for any of my education. My father did. My first car, my father did. If I failed, I had a roof. I had food. All these basics that can be very expensive for someone with literally nothing, I had that. If I didn't have that, part of me says I'd still figure it out anyway because it's in my blood, because my father did, but you don't know. So I had more of a leg up than someone, say, in Kenya, like my mate in Kenya, for example, or in Philippines.
True.
So it depends on who you're talking to. Now, a lot of the successful guys I know start with an exorbitant amount of inherited wealth. Okay? And then the others that are 35 years and or even younger that are worth 100 plus million, they're either freaks or they got very lucky. Now, I put myself in the lucky basket, but I'm not as wealthy as them. You know, I'm not a billionaire. You know, I can live in Dubai. I can live the Dubai lifestyle, but I still got to be watching myself. You know, I'm not buying a Bugatti. Maybe I'm buying a Hurricane and a G-Wagon. You know, I got to watch it. I'm not one of these guys. Yeah.
Got it.
So that answer, unfortunately, I don't want it to deter the audience, but a lot of these guys, they start off with a lot of capital, born into it.
True.
The other thing is, yeah, I was talking about the freaks.
Do you think it's harmful or even helpful for men to talk openly about their emotional struggles or mental health?
Nope. They should not talk about it openly. I cannot see how it can benefit them, and I can absolutely see how it will backfire on them.
Even men to men.
Man to man is in like private with a private friend? Yes. or publicly, like on camera?
No, more so like a private friend to friend.
Oh, yeah, you can talk about that, of course, yeah.
Because if you feel like a lot of men do, I don't know if you take that term with you or not, struggle with having to talk about any struggles that they're having. They're like, you have to man up whatever the situation you have, live and conquer and take it as a hit and just go by your day.
You do have to man up, but when you're close enough with your bros, that's the sort of person that you come to complain a little, but there's a limit to complaining.
Mm-hmm.
No man wants to be around a man that's constantly complaining. What kind of friend is that? So for me as a man, all right, I don't think of myself first. I'm always thinking, how am I to my friend and then to my family? You know, if I'm constantly complaining to a friend, what kind of friend am I? That's what girls do. you know? And it's okay when girls do it because men love solving girls' problems. It's like part of human nature. But when a man does it, I mean, there's a limit. Okay, let's say something terrible happens, very tragic. For a day, maybe you're complaining to a close friend of yours, not publicly, by the way. After that, okay, what's the solution? Let's get into solution mode. But, you know, some guys will just dwell for too long, let's say. I think so anyway.
So you mentioned once before that you had this idea of live as a man or life of a man, basically. What does that phrase, like, what did you mean by that phrase exactly?
It's a good question. I guess there is some criteria. So you have to be physically capable in order for any other man or woman to respect you. Or you're retired from that. So there's a lot of older males who are now fat, but they've done it. You know what I mean? In your younger years, let's say, before you become successful, you have to be physically capable. Now, I'm not saying you need to be world champion kickboxer like Andrew Tate. But guys, go to the gym. Maybe some martial arts training. Maybe some military training. Just basics. You need that for your health anyway in order to go forth in your entrepreneurial career. So it should be a prerequisite to take care of biology first. The second thing is, like I said, your classical masculine traits. Don't complain, look to solve first and foremost. That's literally it. Don't complain, look to solve. No one's perfect. Have I complained before? Of course I have. But I'm looking to solve more than to complain. And then I guess number three, I mean, no money, no honey, as they say. I mean, you know, I meet guys, you know, if they're martial artists or, you know, they're good at one thing. And when a man is broke, they can't help but hide this feeling of inferiority. As bad as it sounds, and it shouldn't be that way, when you don't have the economic advantage, I mean, if your baby needs a life-saving surgery, 200 grand somewhere, you need money for that. Are you responsible for your baby's death if you can't afford it? You are. You brought that into this world, so you need to have a cash reserve or assets reserve. I shouldn't say cash reserve per se, Bitcoin reserve in my case. So unfortunately, you do need a minimum amount of wealth in order to consider yourself, you know, a man. It's hard for me to say that, but it's true, man.
Let's talk finally about blockchain and crypto.
Okay.
Where you think is it heading exactly?
I don't want to break some hearts here. Now, full disclosure, I am an altcoin investor in Cardano, Ethereum, and many NFTs.
All right.
That have skyrocketed up. CryptoPunks, Bored Ape Yacht Clubs, Moonbirds, Squiggles, you name it. I've had them and I've hoarded them and they have gone down. So I come to you with experience, guys. I would almost consider myself a Bitcoin maxi now. So when people say crypto, they paint crypto with a broad brush. I put Bitcoin as a separate conversation. All right. I can talk about why we need Bitcoin all day. Whereas when it comes to altcoins and blockchain, as far as investments goes, yet to be seen. Okay. What is Ethereum doing right now that you can't live without, or the world can't live without, or a specific niche can't live without, or that's better? It's going to be very hard for you to find that reason, that use case. Can you think of one?
Not really, no. Even though I would say the same thing. Most people would think of the same thing for Bitcoin. Why would it still be a use case?
To get rich. That'd be the first thing. Okay, so as I mentioned before earlier in this podcast, what is the number one performing asset over the last 15 years?
For Bitcoin, 55%.
That was the average CAGR before this last pump. I actually heard it's more now. So I am, you know, regurgitating a quote from many months back. So it's even more than that. There is nothing else. So first and foremost, if you want to compare S&P, gold, NASDAQ, Palantir, Tesla, I mean, Bitcoin is number one. That's just facts. People can talk just facts. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, the amount of capital in Bitcoin now, you would consider it a mature asset. So there are other conversations we can have. Unfortunately, I don't think we should address them because we'd need another podcast for that.
For sure.
But let's just say because Bitcoin is now at the sovereign wealth fund level, it's there, guys. It's not going anywhere. I don't think the sovereign wealth funds of the UAE, the gentleman behind it, which, by the way, I've met some of the original people in some of them. I don't think these guys are investing in Bitcoin just for a laugh. They're very smart guys. They know what they're doing. Okay. But they're not doing that with some of these other altcoins, meme coins. Okay. And we know that.
Is it too late to invest in a Bitcoin?
Absolutely not. If you
If it's 120K now, I can just put my money in it?
Okay. Well, you're asking me if it's too late, and these sovereign wealth funds have been buying yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, go on chain and look at the companies that are still buying Bitcoin. I mean, Michael Saylor just bought some last week.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to ask someone who's got the receipts, ask him. And what's he going to say? Well, I just voted with my wallet. I just bought some. Have you ever heard of the saying, follow the money?
But sometimes when you follow the money, you follow too late. You know what I mean? Like, you buy it there and then it gets dips and then you have to, unless you hold and forget about it. That's the thing, because I bought Bitcoin back in 2017 for $4,000. I remember that. But I sold it at $20,000. I did not wait. So I said, like, okay, I got my 5x return from this. I could just sell it. And then I see it just bumps up to 60, then it goes back down, and then it went to 100, and then it goes back a little bit down. So it was very volatile, but I just didn't feel like I would ever catch up the same opportunity. I'd never feel like it's the right time. I can never catch the time to say that this is the time to invest in a Bitcoin.
Well, here's some quick tips for Bitcoin. If you invest $100 now, wake up in 10 years, that's when you can sell it. If you're not prepared to do that, guys, please, do not invest in Bitcoin, okay? You don't lose money on Bitcoin. You lose because you're impatient. Bitcoin is doing what it's doing.
True.
Okay? So asking me that question as an inferior man to these large-scale companies, I mean, I'm following the money. Yeah? Now, unfortunately, I don't have the liquidity anymore to buy Bitcoin as much as I want. In fact, I'm probably getting less Bitcoin as I spend it for my expensive lifestyle here. But I'm definitely not going to sell my last ones, we'll say that much. Okay, so Bitcoin has the kind of set in stone use case, and crypto is yet to be seen. But because I'm a hoarder, and because I am someone with a low time preference and I have patience, I still have a lot of Ethereum and a lot of Cardano. Okay, now I want them to succeed in doing what they're doing, the decentralized applications and building everything on the blockchain, making everything kind of democratic as far as like companies go. But I mean, I haven't seen anything democratic play out. In fact, not ironically, I moved by choice from a Western democracy to a monarchy here. Why? It's a perfect comparison to blockchain, okay? When we're here in the UAE under monarch rule, when a ruler or a series of ministers says, we're doing this, it gets done.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at democracies, it's very bloated. There's too many signatures to sign off, too many arguments to be had. It takes too long to do something. Sometimes you can't do it at all because of the disagreement. But this also happens in blockchain. When things are so decentralized, you've got these DREPs or whatever. They've got to vote for things. They can't agree on things, so it moves so slow. And that's why Ethereum hasn't done much because of this decentralization. Now, are there some use cases, whether it be gambling, which, you know, is not something that I'm into, or blockchain voting or stable coins? Yes, but the block space itself is cheap. So that doesn't necessarily mean that the Ethereum price will go up. And it's the same for other tokens. Like, a lot of these ecosystems have use cases, but they're not necessarily going to be tokens that appreciate in price. You know what I mean?
Got it.
Does that make sense?
It does.
You know what I mean? Like, you can use the blockchain, but doesn't mean the token's going to go up because of the tokenomics.
Yes.
There's still a lot of inflation in a lot of these altcoins, which makes them very akin to fiat currencies. Whereas you don't have that with Bitcoin. You've got that fixed 21 million supply. You actually don't have that in most of these altcoins. And people don't understand how to make that distinction, that the altcoins are more similar to the US dollar than they are in Bitcoin. Just because it's on blockchain doesn't actually make it similar.
Mm-hmm.
The principles and the code behind blockchain is very different to these altcoins. And then what about exploits? I mean, how many of these altcoins, I can honestly think of all of them except for Cardano, that have had downtime because of the complexity of those blockchains? As you know, every time you add complexity or an extra function, now you add risks for security as well. And it's just so messy in that regard. Whereas Bitcoin has never been compromised. Four lines of code, so simple.
It always stayed the same.
More or less. You know, let's not get into, you know, SegWit and let's not do that. But more or less, Bitcoin has stayed the same and the others are just, they can't seem to work it out. Now, I want to be wrong, guys. I'm an investor. So take it from me that I want to be wrong. But I honestly am looking for a moment to consolidate all of my altcoins and all of my NFTs except for one CryptoPunk, because it's a, you know, kind of like moment in time, into Bitcoin. So maybe next cycle, if we're chatting and you ask me about crypto, I'll say, yep, I'm 100% in Bitcoin.
Sound advice for people to learn a little bit about blockchain and crypto for sure. What's your last advice you would like to share to the audience today based on everything that we talked about?
Okay, guys, take care of your health. Typically, take care of your health first part of the day, get it over and done with. And then whatever it is you're doing, whether you're a passive investor or you're trying to climb the corporate ladder at work, which is also fine. I mean, there are guys, you know, on huge salaries that don't have their own business, but they got very healthy salaries. Whatever it is you're doing, guys, give it a decade. If you give it a decade and work in silence before you post about it, I'm sure you're not going to have any issues in life. But if you don't have the patience, you can be the smartest guy in the room. And you might find yourself in your mid-30s or 40s where it is a time in your life where you might be past your peak. And that can be a very daunting feeling to feel like, hey, like I'm halfway through my life and I'm at zero. You know, and that's a big fear for me that drove me in my 20s. Because, yeah, there is a difference between 18 and broke and 40 and broke.
True. True. Well, it sounds like a sound advice for sure for the audience listening here. Daniel, thank you so much for being part of this podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, bro. I enjoyed it.
Maybe another one round to come. You never know.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.